Chapter 41 The Seven Door Magic Fair. As bad as my hangover from Sire Kay's wedding was, I insisted on ringing the great silver bell that Bannermore had borrowed from the bride sister of Ishii to open the fair. I regretted it instantly, as the vibrations from the bell made my head shudder and my stomach heave, and it reminded me of another bell, long ago. A cheap brass thing, no better than an oversized cowbell, that had signaled the beginning of the Goblin War. This was a prettier bell, but the hangover and the sound stirred that memory. But the grin on Bannermore's face was worth the pain. The former foot wizard had done an excellent job on the magic fair, and this was the culmination of his efforts. He had been as invested in its success as Alia had been in the success of the wedding, perhaps more so, since the fair was a paying concern, not an expense. I felt compelled to say a few words, after Coinfather Riddard of Sendaria Port gave the benediction and administered the fair oath to all those assembled. I was about to yell when I remembered that I was a mage, and that there were spells for that. I quickly cast one that allowed my voice to be heard by everyone without me shouting. "By the ringing of this bell, I now open the Seven Door Magic Fair," I said, as cheerfully as I could manage. It was just a year ago that I rode through the pass where the dike now stands, through a devastated and neglected countryside, and a dispirited and beaten people. I brought with me the strength of the survivors of Bovol Vale, and the idea that magic, when used in service of the people, enriches us all. When I rode in, I was a new mage lord in an old duchy. Now I find I'm an old mage lord, as old as they can be, for I am the first, in a new kingdom. There were cheers for the king and dutiful prayers of praise and pleas to the gods for his continued health from the clergy. I hoped someone from the family was listening, so they knew I was doing my part. When I rode in, Sevendor was a sliver of its old glory. Now my domain extends to Hosley, Northwood, and beyond. When I rode into Sevendor, it was led, if it can be called that, by a drunken wastrel who saw it as his slave. Now it is free, prosperous, and happy. More cheers. That did nothing good for my hangover. This fair is the culmination of my ideal. Magic has served the people of Sevendor handsomely, in peacetime and in war. It defends our frontiers and enriches our crops. You can see the bounty we take from the fields today, thanks to my green warden, Master Olmeg. More applause. The pristine and abundant state of Sevendor's harvest had been the talk of the travellers arriving for the fair, and I'd done everything I could to ensure Olmeg got the credit for it. The decrepit village I rode through on the way to the castle has been replaced with a vibrant, lively little town, 10 times the size of its former self. The streets are paved, there are inns and taverns and artisans, and much of that effort can be tracked to Bannermore, the spell warden, who registered you as Magi when you arrived. Slightly less applause, which stung a bit. Bannermore had been working tirelessly to organize the fair, in addition to his responsibilities as head of the village council. But their reluctance was understandable. Magical fairs like this had been prohibited under the bans, and every non-chartered mage who arrived was nervous about signing his name, or giving it, many were illiterate, to anyone, for any reason. For the next week, I invite you to buy, sell, trade, and discuss the affairs of the magical world and how they have changed of late. For any with questions, Lady Pentandra, steward of, well, pretty much everything right now, will be throwing several receptions to discuss the matter, and I encourage you to participate. That will be just one of many scholarly events hosted by the various orders. The Order of Horka is recruiting war magi and interested parties at the Red Pavilion near the river, I said, demonstrating with a flashy display. The Order of Hesia is likewise recruiting at the Green Pavilion on the other side. Both are worthy orders doing important work, and they welcome both chartered and uncharted magi, I said. And the pay isn't too bad, I added. There will also be several scholarly talks by members of the Order of Tarkarine, including former court wizard to Duke Rad of Castal, Master Dunsellan. The mage lord had eagerly accepted my invitation to come to the fair, and he was not the only one. According to Bannermore's registry, there were over 30 high magi present in Sevendor, not counting the ones who lived here. Not many Hawkins, I noticed. The fight to preserve Barrowbell was pressing, but Master Ikorod and Lance of Boon and Master Comoran had all arrived with their apprentices, as well as Taran, Mavone, and a few others. Many were eager to share or reopen lost avenues of magic or merely demonstrate obscure spells or systems. Lastly, as many have already surmised by rumour, I said, grinning, at midweek there will be a competition amongst the low magi. The winner of the competition, should he or she accept the oath, shall be given custody of a witchstone. A gasp and murmur of excitement rushed through the crowd. That was a little better than giving away a mere fief and a wife. The exact nature of the contest will be a secret until I reveal it. It will be open and free to any mage, chartered or unchartered, who desires to participate. There will be more announcements, but those are all I had. Have a good fair, I said, and rang the bell a final time. Everyone cheered, and I staggered away. The fair was technically held on the Sevendorf Village Commons, but even before Kay's wedding there had been foot wizards and hedge witches, resident adepts and spellmongers from all over the Riverlands and beyond, making their way through the dike for the event. Both the Lakeside Inn and the Sevendorf Inn were packed to capacity, and there were tents strung out across the commons and on some recently harvested fields nearby. That had certainly helped attendance at Kay's wedding. There was a wagonload of gifts from strangers for he and his new bride, people who just wanted to kiss his ass as a means of getting to my own. It also helped with the special fare tax Bannermore had imposed on guests at the inns. I couldn't argue with the way he had organized it. Bannermore had the north half of the commons organized in lots, chalked on the ground, in 10-foot squares. For a reasonable weekly fee, a merchant could erect a booth or pitch a tent on the hopefully busy concourse. Those lots were already mostly full, with tents and temporary awnings crowding under the dam. Or a merchant could pay a much lower fee for a spot at the far end of the commons, just large enough to stand or sit on a blanket and sell. There were plenty interested in doing just that, as many had few items or small wares that did not need the investment of a market booth. Many a penniless foot wizard brought a few cherished components gathered on their travels and wished to trade or sell. Many others were just too poor to afford a booth and sold to passers-by from cramped blankets. There were plenty of buyers and sellers, I noted, as I toured the site with Bannermore, touting everything from fellow Howdy stones. That was one of Bannermore's men. The spell warden had hired a few of his former footsore colleagues to assist him in sales, and the stones were rare enough to attract attention, to yellow and brown knot coral, to various wand woods, to bushels of magical herbs. Some local spellmongers from Sendaria Port and elsewhere had set up shop, temporarily, hawking their enchantments, spells, and scrolls of lore to other magi, and letting everyone know what their specialties were. A Remeran firm from just south of Wenshaw had a smart little booth where they advertised spells useful to merchants of all sorts, for example, or the former court wizard of the Baron of Elisand, now a Kirsiath addict, offering to cast mighty sorceries at bargain prices. Several enchanters of various sorts were doing brisk business with finished enchantments, from the simple to the sublime. That was to become the bread and butter of the fair, it turned out. As much trade as was done between magi, or quasi-magi, a much larger amount was done as magi sold spells and enchanted items to the public. Some of the items had been prohibited or rare for so long under the censorate that demand was high, and some of the best-selling spells were the least complicated. A pair of foot wizards, who had learned their trade haphazardly, could do little general magic, but between the two of them they could do quite a passable heatstone. A heatstone is essentially a very, very hot rock that doesn't cool down until the spell fails. It takes a lot of energy to initiate, and almost as much to sustain it. A good spellmonger can usually enchant one that will work for several days or even weeks, if given good materials and enough time. What this pair of magi did with their wild magic was more impressive. One would set the enchantment of heat upon the stone, while the other would focus on commanding and controlling the heat. The result was a stone that could heat up water to near boiling, when commanded with a simple phrase. Peasants loved heat stones, Firewood is dear in the winter, and a good heatstone would keep the chill off a hut when the snow made gleaning firewood unlikely. Or put it in the bottom of a kettle or bathtub, and it would raise the temperature until you commanded it to stop. They sold out of the score of stones they brought the first day. Another booth was selling Bannermore's modest cedar wands that would produce a small mage light on command. There were merchants with magical toys, tools, and weapons. There were hedge witches selling sorry wood from Tuin, and foot wizards hawking marsh boar bones. There were water witches selling their services, war magi and trackers advertising theirs, and enchanters taking commissions left and right. "Quite a good showing for a first year," Baron Arathaniel admitted the first day, as he toured the fairgrounds with me. He was being generous. My little fair was not a tithe as large as his. I couldn't help but feel proud nonetheless. "You need more food vendors, though," he suggested. He'd brought Law Brother Hamaris along, and the monk helpfully pointed out more taverns would be a good idea, too. "After yesterday's feed," Sire Sigilyn, who had asked to accompany us, said, "there's not an empty belly in the vale." The mountain lord had dressed lordly for the first time since I'd met him, complete with a light blue cotton mantle and circlet. He looked relaxed and confident, not wary and cautious. Part of that was from his recent reconquest of his lost lands, and part of that was from the stream of revenue he was now beginning to receive from Lorden sales. Trestendor's domain was nearer Sevendor's now, so the additional tolls that Westflaria had imposed were gone, making the trade even more valuable. "Still, a man likes to be able to drink at 3 or 4 establishments without walking more than 100 paces, the Law Brother went on expansively. "It makes him feel as if he's accomplished something." "Only a monk would call that an accomplishment," chuckled the Baron. "All in all, a worthy beginning, Mage Lord, and an impressive little domain you have here. I can see why you desire to protect it so valiantly. Only what?" I asked cautiously. "Only now you've gone and ruined it by conquering all of those other domains. Instead of focusing your efforts here, you'll be trying to manage them all. That's how my family began losing their power here in the Vales. We were given too much responsibility and too many lands, and eventually we let the land slip away into the hands of our vassals." "Well, the dynastic wars didn't help," pointed out Hamaris. The Baron couldn't say anything to that. They'd been over before he was born, but I'd say you three have made a good start at restoring House Lensley to prominence. "House Lensley," mused the Baron. "There are only a few families of us left. The strength of my house was always in our mastery of our lands, unless someone wants to marry my youngest daughter." "Is she marriageable?" asked Sire Sigilyn with some interest. "My sister has been after me to take a wife, but I didn't feel comfortable making suits with Gimbal on my borders. With him gone, I think I might need some help running my new lands." "She's a comely lass," agreed the Law Brother, before the Baron could open his mouth. "And quick-witted, full of spirit and fire, she would bear you many fine sons," he said, with the encouraging tone of a pimp. "She's spirited," the Baron agreed diplomatically, with a chuckle. "My wife and I did not think we could have another child at her age, but, well, the gods will have what they will, and now Rowona is due to be expelled, graduated, from the Bride Sister School in Sindaria Port."
"And you say she's comely?" Sigilyn asked. "And intelligent?"
"Proficient with her letters and sums, and well-read in the classics," assured the monk on his master's behalf. "And a voice as gentle as..."
"All right, I can't let you go on," sighed Arathaniel, stopping to look at some exotic shells, the purpose of which he had no idea. "Rowona is an intelligent, spirited, comely daughter, but she's got a temper, and a mean streak, like her aunt. I was considering her for holy orders, since finding her a worthy husband will be difficult. But if you are the man to tame her," he said, clapping his hand on Sigilyn's shoulder.
"I will at least meet the lady," consented Sigilyn, pleased.
"Perhaps she would consider a quiet mountain home and a decent husband."
"She'd be quite an asset in battle," suggested Hamaris helpfully.
earning him a glare from the Baron, and that would cement an alliance between Tristendor and Sandaria. He looked at me, hopefully. Sevendor is going to be well disposed to both or either, I said. Besides, I'm already married. But you have a vacant land in Northwood, as Sigilyn does in its neighbouring estate of Brendor. If the lord you choose to run the domain is not yet wed, perhaps Sire Sigilyn's sister might consider a match. Sigilyn's eyes bulged. Sasha? You want someone to marry Sasha? I shrugged. The man I'm considering is, above all, a country knight, Sir Ronsel. He's young, vibrant, and has done me admirable service in shepherding the Bovoli refugees here. More, he's proven in battle and has commanded men. He is intelligent and could likely run a domain, if he had the proper woman by his side, I added casually. First you were trying to marry me off, and now my sister, Sigilyn said, grinning, and last year I was wondering if I'd have to send her to take holy orders just to save money. But Sasha is past the age most men usually consider youthful. And Sir Ronsel is nearly 40, I nodded. Yet he found her comely enough at the Chepstow Fair, he could not take his eyes off her at the lists. If she's agreeable, I think he would be too, and that would solve the problem of putting an outlander in charge of a Riverlands domain. I have yet to announce his appointment, but if he had Sasha as his intended bride, I would feel better about it, as I am guessing would the folk of Northwood. We continued discussing the personal lives of other people and conspired to change them to fit our whim until it was lunchtime. It was my treat. I'd had Bannermore reserve a special lot in the middle of the fair for my personal use, where my campaign tent had been erected. It wasn't Arathaniel's massive affair, but it afforded us some privacy, particularly after I enchanted a bubble of quiet around us. A churl designated to the task showed up a few moments later with fruit, pickled eggs, pickled pork, a jug of beer, a platterful of meat pies, preserves, and two loaves of bread. One of Sagal's new, fake Bovali cheeses was included. The important thing will be to pacify any regions that retain loyalty to the Warbird, Arathaniel continued. One of the three estates I took was led by his son, Sir Galavere. He was well-liked by the local people, who saw his relation to his father as a way toward lighter taxes. If there is any resistance, Mage Lord, you must crush it as thoroughly as you executed those traitors. I think that when word gets around what you did to those castles, there will be very little in the way of resistance, noted Sigilyn. Vassals only get rebellious when there is oppression and security enough to do so. If their castles are not secure, there can be no rebellion. If there is no oppression, there will be no rebellion, I pointed out. I stopped. We had visitors, three of them, tall, willowy women with slanted eyes and misshapen ears. Perfect complexions and pristine gowns were walking toward us across the fairgrounds and attracted the gaze and attention of everyone there. Is that your daughter? Sire Sigilyn asked Baron Arathaniel hopefully. Any of them? They aren't even human, I corrected. Those are the forms the tree folk take when they want to blend in with humanity. Someone should mention that being stunningly beautiful is not quite the way to blend, Arathaniel said, rising automatically as they approached. They're not human, but they're still women, I shrugged. You try to tell them they can't be as pretty as they can imagine. The three Alca-Allon approached until we were forced by propriety to stand and offer a bow in courtesy. We remained standing. To what do I owe the honour of this visit? I said, after introducing our otherworldly guests to Baron Arathaniel and Sire Sigilyn. We merely desire to walk in the Vale and see this magic fair of yours, the leader, Lady Varen, said. We are curious as to the state of your magical practice. It will be helpful and instructive when it comes to advising you. There is another thing, the silver-haired one said. You told us you are willing to provide snowstone for our new dwelling. We have commissioned the work and wish you to meet the architect. Before I could agree, the three of them parted, and a smaller figure was revealed. Allow us to introduce Master Guri Vok, stone-singing master of the Karshak Alon. I was stunned. I had rarely met one of the elusive stone folk before, but I had read about them and their role in the non-human politics on Kalador. Many thought them extinct, but I knew they were just reclusive. This one was nearly hairless everywhere but his mighty brown shaggy mane, which almost buried his face within it.
"At your service," the diminutive figure said, with a rough bow and a rougher voice. "These Alka have commissioned me to build some little dainty for them. They asked that I speak to you about it, Mage Lord."
And so we did. It must have been an odd sight, seeing three tall Alka women, three human men, and a short Karshak Alon male, almost as wide as he was tall, sitting around at lunch in the middle of the commons. But Master Goody proved to be much friendlier than I'd suspected, after you got used to the gruff mannerisms of the Karshak.
"I saw their designs," he confided, once I'd ordered a flagon of ale for him, "and as usual they barely took structural integrity into account. Everything was about increasing the flow of arcane energies, or some garbage like that, and some of the design choices were made for aesthetic reasons," he said, as if he was diagnosing a disease. "I think I can work with them, but I wanted to see this mysterious stone I have to work with first, and they insisted I meet the Mage Lord," he said, as if it were a chore he was dreading.
"How much of a dwelling are you planning on building on that mound for them?" I asked, curious.
"A single tower," Master Goody dismissed, "barely 10 stories tall, and designed to be comfortable for Humani as well as Alon. I've built more hideous things for clients."
10 stories, I gasped. "That will put the spire in sight of the entire valley."
"Don't worry," the Karshak dismissed with a wave of his hand. "I've shit bigger buildings than that. If you don't want it seen, it won't be seen. It's an Alka settlement," he reminded me. "They can do that."
"So how are they paying you?" Baron Arathaniel asked quietly.
"In snowstone," he acknowledged after some thought. "They brought me a sample to entice me. It's really amazing stuff. Nothing like it anywhere else. I think it could do some incredible things if used properly."
He looked at his three beautiful clients.
"If used properly," he repeated pointedly.
"You are a mage?" asked Sire Sigalan, surprised.
"Stone singer,"
he corrected, as if he was considering whether or not to take the knight's accusation as an insult.
"Whole different thing."
"The stone singers of the Karshak Alon are legendary," agreed Lady Varen solemnly. "They raised most of the ancient cities of the Alon."
"It's a type of magic," I explained, "but a very specialized type. The Karshak are adept at using arcane force to bind a building or structure together. Their stone singers are why. They make the kind of stone melding Rondon does look like a child's set of blocks. So why do you desire snowstone, Master Goody?"
"My clan desires it," he dismissed. "I just want to build. This is the first thing of significance the Alka have built in 100 years. I want to do it. The snowstone is secondary."
"I have quite a lot of it," I pointed out. "I would be happy to trade some for some construction myself." The Karshak looked tolerantly amused.
"Like what?"
"I'd like to build a much larger and more modern keep," I answered. "A large one, built directly into the cliff. Something that could withstand a siege as well as the mountain itself. And heavily enchanted, of course." The Karshak whistled.
"That's a big job, Mage Lord."
"You're right," I sighed. "I figured you wouldn't want to be bothered with such a troublesome job. I guess I'll just have to get a Humani builder to design it."
"Let us not be hasty,"
Goody said, raising his hand suddenly.
"I've seen their work and, well, it is good for what it is, I suppose, but what kind of fortress do you envision?"
As I sketched out my plans, I became aware that both Arathaniel and Sigalan were feeling out of their element, and worse. They had just learned about a neighbouring lord's ambitious plan to fortify his domain. In ordinary circumstances, Penny pointed out later, that was usually the prelude for invasion. Like I had the time.
"That is impressive,"
even the Karshak engineer agreed when I had finished describing my vision.
It will take a few years and many crews, and a lot of magic,
he added. Money and magic are not an issue, I declared. I need an impregnable fortress for when the dead god comes calling. That earned some frightened looks from my human colleagues and some understanding nods from the Alka. If we cannot defend ourselves from dragon flame and sorcery, then we have no hope in this war.
The Alka's commission was simple by comparison,
Master Guri said, shaking his huge, shaggy head.
This fortress would take years. The design issues alone are almost insurmountable. Few humani are skilled enough to even fathom the complexities of building this sort of structure. And to build it to be proof against the Gavani,
he asked, almost snarling the last word.
That would be a feat beyond magic.
So you don't think you can do it? I asked, my hopes fading. He looked at me, his expression irritated.
Are you mad? I am the only one who could do it, he declared. I can have most of my clan here working before the end of the year. But, he continued in his deep voice, there is the issue of my prize.
Having been an artisan, however briefly, I could understand the importance of getting that sort of thing out of the way quickly. What is it?
The usual fee in gold, he shrugged, minus expenses. I will need that to pay my folk. But my real fee,
he said, looking around suspiciously,
is that I want you to help me.
I'm not a stonemason, much less a stone singer, I protested.
No, 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 Master Guri sighed. I want you to help me recover something of mine that was lost. My family's old kingdom was once located within these hills, deep under the rock, back within the heart of the mountains. But this Humani land lies closest to it.
You mean Ascurast? I asked casually. That perked the stone singer up.
You've heard of it?
Finding it was one of the alluring features of Sevendor, I agreed. I figured it would make a good secret base. Some place for magical research that had little hope of being discovered or taken.
That's a Ascurast, chuckled the stone singer good-naturedly. The Alka called it Telasanoha, which means hidden city of fortune in one of their damned dialects. That's what brought my clan to these hills to begin with. We were at war with the bloody Kizarai, and my clan was nearly decimated. We withdrew from the Colleens to here, and secretly dug into the Uwari Hills. We ruled the Ascurast for nearly 300 years, before our numbers grew smaller and we were forced to repatriate and abandon our mansion.
So you want it back? I asked, surprised.
It is ours, he agreed, but our people are much diminished, and there is room for many in the endless halls of Ascurast. In the coming troubles we merely seek the most secure of dwellings. We would not mind sharing it, should our guests be as courteous as we expect.
It will be quite a job just to get there, Lady Varen agreed. It has been an age since any light dared disturb it, but its remote location was one of its advantages, especially in these dangerous times. But stay your work on the Spellmonger's Tower until ours is complete, Master Karshak, she reminded him gently.
He shrugged. I could build your flimsy temple in a week, he said. This fortress now. Nothing like that has been built since Ascurast was prosperous.
He seemed to find the prospect of building such a difficult structure a welcome challenge. Then we have an agreement, I declared. Bring as many of your folk to Sevendor as you need, and we will feed and house them, and you may use my domain as a base to help relocate to Ascurast. But I want my fortress. My family needs to be safe, and we need a much better place to develop our knowledge of Irionite. The naturally lower resistance to magic that the Snowstone provides makes Sevendor an ideal place in which to experiment. But my castle is just not big enough.
But the fortress you envision,
Sire Sigilyn said, shaking his head in wonder,
it would dominate the valley.
You could strike out at any other domain, any other lord from such a stronghold, and they would be powerless to stop you. He had a point, one which Penny lectured me about later. Lord Brother Hamaris rose to my defense, however.
I, for one, do not fear our friend the Spellmonger, he declared, slurring his words ever so slightly.
Penny had learned from some gossip that the Law Brother was closer to the Lensleys than his clerical allegiance would otherwise dictate. He was apparently the bastard son of Arathaniel's father and a commoner. He was his brother in deed as well as in name.
Can you imagine it? What would he do with all that land?
No, it is clear that he has higher concerns than conquering the rest of the Bontol Vales. The very idea sounded tiring to me. To be honest, I've gotten my fill of conquest. The extra lands and revenues are nice, but the paperwork alone cools my belligerence. No, this tower will be built to defy the dead god, not bully my neighbours. Besides, I said, as I took my final sip of wine, it sounds like I'm just going to be too damn busy with construction plans to conquer anyone anytime soon.